Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the National Coalition of Women of Color Blog Talk Radio, the first and only forum for women of color in the construction industry. Today is January 7th, 2009, and we are airing live from Stone Mountain, Georgia, and we have a very exciting end-of-year show on December 31st. We also want to thank our callers that are going to be coming in to the show. We're very excited about 2009, as we all know that Barack Obama will be taking office, and we have a very interesting amount of information that is going to be utilized today, and I wanted folks to sit around and take a look at what is taking place, bringing out some transparency on where we need to go as a coalition, and indeed to find out how we are going to go to work as a coalition, as an organization that is championing our community. NCWCC is the change for women of color in contracting. So I want to welcome our callers on. Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
All right. Wanted to basically go over some of the things that's been transpiring with us, and want everybody kind of sit back and realize some of the things that have taken place. We have continued to stay abreast of the news that's involving construction, because as you know, and as everybody knows, that the knowledge is power. In order to identify where we're going, we need to identify what the overall levels of how to get there. So wanted to share some of the things that's going on in terms of our communities, and I'm hoping that people call in and understand that there is a movement that is going around the country, and it's called the restabilization of our communities. And there are funds that are being allocated every day throughout our community, strategically being able to supply affordable, low-income housing for, as a lot of us have been able to experience, that our income has went to past middle to maybe low income now. But I wanted to share with you that there's over $100 billion in work that HUD is putting out. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development provided Pennsylvania with a $59.6 million in neighborhood stabilization funds as part of a nationwide effort to slow the spread of foreclosure and falling home prices. In addition, they received another $16.8 million to buy land, property, demolish, and rehabilitate abandoned properties to provide down payment and closing cost assistance to low- and moderate-income buyers. One of the vehicles that that we've been utilizing is that, as everyone knows, if you go to our site, which is ncwcc.org, we have a Youth Build Foundation. And we have been trying to utilize the Youth Build model in order to build our program. Now, for those who don't know, the Youth Build was a program that was founded in New York in 1978, and the name of the program is Youth Build USA, and it has about 220 branches nationwide. Now, what this does is the core of the Youth Build is the construction training programs where unskilled and unemployed 18-year-olds to 24-year-olds renovate abandoned buildings and turn them into affordable housing. And then the participants either get their GED or high school diploma, and they take classes on construction topics and receive one-on-one counseling. Well, the drawback on this part is that once this program has ended, you still have a lesson of being able to transcend these young people into the construction industry and being able to be allocated into the workforce. So that is where we have strategically tried to align ourselves up with people like Charitable Connections. And I see that she's on. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi. Good evening, Karima.
Very good. And I wanted to welcome the caller from 219. I know this lady very well.
Hi. Hi. Hi, Karima.
All right. Caller from 952-261. Okay. Caller from 651.
Hi, Karima. How you doing?
Good. Caller from 651-233.
Hey, Karima.
Okay. And caller from 347.
Hi, Karima. It's Henrietta.
All right. Ladies, thank you and welcome to the show. I wanted to direct everybody about what I was talking about. Because of Michelle, she has given us a very direct vision on how to create a focus on this new vision of health, safety, security, and peace of mind through Charitable Connections' mission. And this is a wonderful woman. This is one of our sisters. And I certainly appreciate you giving us some direction and being able to pull us into a mindset of how we should perform as an organization. And, Michelle, welcome to the call. I really wish that I could pull some information out of you about your project. I know it's under that little lock and key right now, but we don't have to say the name, but we can actually tell folks what you're doing in the inner city of community here in Atlanta.
Well, Karima, we have been very, very blessed to be in the middle of a situation where we have great community support. We have a neighborhood where we have a lot of retired African-American professionals who have lived in their homes for 30 to 40 years and are in their 60s, 70s, and 80s and are dying off. And the neighborhood was very concerned that we would have vacant houses because the size houses that we have in our community are about 800 to 1,000 square feet, which is not they're market obsolescent, is what I would say. They're three bedroom, one bath, some of them three bedrooms, two baths. And so the neighborhood began taking a look at what the housing stock looked like and also at what the neighborhood development capacity was, because we have your traditional liquor stores, paycheck cashing places for our industries along our corridor. And we're on the Martin Luther King Jr. corridor in Atlanta. And so the community said, we want to change what this looks like. We want to not do gentrification, but we want to do regeneration. And we want to work with the fringes of activity that are going on around our community. We have about 37 prisoners a day being released into the city of Atlanta from federal and state prisons with $25 and no place to stay. We have drug trafficking. We have prostitution. We have child sex trades, all going on within a mile of our neighborhood. And so we wanted to make an impact. And so the community came together and said, we need to be doing several things on several fronts and working with the people who are in the homeless shelters, in the transitional facilities. And so we've had a human service outreach with the churches and the neighborhoods, going out and reaching out to the people and help facilitating their reentry process. And so what's happened is that we have a lot of low-income housing in our community as well. We had probably the largest bulk of low-income housing concentrated in the city of Atlanta up until a few months ago. And what the city of Atlanta is trying to do is trying to mix income and allow income to be mixed within neighborhoods and communities. And through the process of that, we've had several abandoned multifamily apartment unit complexes in our community, and we've taken a look at what we can do to regenerate the community from an economic perspective. What we found is, in the housing crisis, is that people couldn't afford homes because they didn't have income levels that would support the economics of a house. And so what we needed to do was we needed to raise the bar of economics in the neighborhood. And so we said, we have houses, we have opportunity for construction. Construction is a targeted high-growth industry. Let's look at how can we can make that a basis for what we were doing economically. And when I met Karima, she brought something to me in my own neighborhood that I didn't even know was there. And that was a 50,000 square foot training and construction facility that could be utilized for construction training. And so it's almost like two worlds collided together at one time to look at that job training component. Well, the next piece is, how do we utilize and create a sustainable environment, but also create a sustainable environment for the individual youth and adults who need to have sustainable economic capacity? And how do we do that while we are expanding our community and improving our community at the same time? And so the construction piece offered that. But in addition to that, we also have to look at healthcare. We have an aging population in our neighborhood, and we have youth who are obese. And we are fighting some really tremendous health issues, minority health issues, with obesity, heart disease, diabetes in our community. In fact, in our community is a dialysis center where we have 300 residents a day going for dialysis.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay?
Oh, my God.
Okay? So what we decided to do was look at how we can impact that. And so we started a program with the Association of Black Cardiologists, the Diabetes Foundation, a natural health cooking restaurant, and several health practitioners to begin to educate and inform the community about their cooking and their diet and their behavior. And we started with grocery store tours and teaching the seniors how to read labels and gain an understanding of what the impact of fatback was on their diets and their health conditions. We then started having weekly cooking sessions where we would teach them how to cook and provide them with nutritious food as part of the class that they could go home and cook so that they could impact their families. And the result has been we have trained up a number of health advocates in our community who go around and share this information with the schools, with their neighborhood groups. And so all of this is going on at one time, and we said, look, we need to create a model community that was in encompassed health, healthy living, urban farming, and affordable housing, all in one component that was connected to parks and connected to schools so that we could reestablish community again, because another piece that we found is that neighbors weren't talking to one another. And so we needed to reconnect with one another. So we engaged the churches, we engaged the neighborhood groups, we engaged the schools, and this model has developed around this abandoned apartment complex, and we are creating what's called a vital living center. We will have urban farming in the common areas and on a 3-acre tract of land adjacent so people can have fresh foods every day, and we can address some of the issues with food security in our economy. We will have health and wellness center that is alternative and complementary medicine, as well as incorporating public health and private health. We have the fitness component in our recreation centers. We've recently, in the last 2 years, built a $20 million recreation facility, and we have a smaller park recreation center that's local to the neighborhood that has fitness equipment brand new because the community raised about $300,000. To upgrade the park. So with all of this coming together, we're looking at a total new way of living, a total new life, and giving, starting with economic opportunity in the construction industry and giving the availability of housing and affordable housing on several levels. We have some no-interest mortgages that we'll be providing, and we have some regular interest mortgages, and we have some rental capacity. But it's all going to be keyed around living a vital life. What is your life about? What is your passion about? And living in an environment that is a live, work, and play where you can walk, take mass transit, because we have all of these features built into our neighborhood. So did I give away the store?
No. I think it's absolutely what the it fits the mission. Direction of how, what our purpose, our charge of life, and I always tell people, go to our mission statement, a charge to keep I have. I also want to kind of summarize what I see as the transformation of transforming minds and behavior by promoting healthy living and lifestyle choices. And what you have done is just taken the political and economic and social barriers and keep the individuals and families and neighborhoods and communities and being able to empower them to achieve God's given destiny for us as a people, as human beings. So the only thing that's so interesting is that that's the prescription of any society is to be able to live and be a community where there's safe, and so this is the revitalization, the restabilization of our community. This is bigger than construction, but it has to start from somewhere. And so as I want everybody to understand, the National Coalition is also wrapping itself around a lot of Michelle's individuals that she's dealing with and trying to keep things on a simplicity level to provide her with the, not only but the technical assistance, but some risk management and a model to help build through some of the shortfall that's in the construction industry. One of the things that's very crucial, you guys, is that we have people who have to see that. We have to have the contractors that come into our neighborhoods know that they need to hire those individuals in the neighborhood. Well, therefore, that's never worked. So what we've been working on and really wrapping ourselves around, and Michelle has agreed to work with us on our Youth Build Foundation to build a national program for Youth Build to help our youth, be a part of this economy. But the thing about it is it's the most well-kept secret in all the internal communities. The article that I'm reading from is from a business journal that says Youth Build helps groom future of building trades. And even as part of the economy, it has not had any impact. The funds are still there. The program has been running regardless of any of the economic slowdowns. And now we're going to be teaching our students about green building design, so that our low-income homeowners will be able to benefit through energy cost savings. So that is a very formidable level. And I know Henrietta is about to flip over there right now, so I really want her to kind of chime in on that.
You know, there's a lot of static here, and I can't hear you that clearly.
Okay.
So can you repeat that question for me again?
Has it been static the whole time, you guys?
No, now it's by. Yeah, it's been a little staticky, but now it seems clearer.
I know that the health and wellness piece, I just had you ready to flip off the phone. So I know you felt like a minister there, couldn't hold your peace, but I'd like for you to chime in on some of the things that Michelle is offering.
It is so incredibly exciting. I'm sitting here with my mouth open. How awesome can it be? I am so proud of you all. I mean, just to see a situation and make a decision that you're going to deal with it, I am too proud, and I can't wait to see it. I'll be back in Atlanta at the end of the month. But the health part and the gardening, that's where you get the freshest food. You couldn't, and most of us, at least our grandparents, were farmers.
That's
and
right.
So there's a tradition of farming in our community. And this is great. And I can just see the kids going through there, picking tomatoes and taking care of their little plots. It is awesome and an incredible model. And if there's anything that I can do to spread that model, I look forward to meeting with everyone when I do get to Atlanta. Because we've got a lot of work to do, but we're up to it. We're up to getting the work done.
But I think that one of the things that we really want to include, and I'm absolutely trying to work with Charitable Connections, because as everybody knows, as I always say, I'm only an estimator. So, I'm an estimator, so what I was wondering if we could use the we would probably write in that Kagan equipment on each one of those units.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Part of what we could start, because what's happening is if you could get a little bit about what Kagan water does, right?
If I can get you to kind of maybe give us,
because this is, I didn't want to tell you why I wanted you on the call, but I just asked you to call in, so, and Michelle, that's why you asked me what the topic was, and notice I never said anything, so I kind of purposely did that, so I just wanted the meeting to come together, and what we want to do is just let, you know, for topic purposes to talk about where this ties in, because having fresh vegetables and dead water, it still doesn't make a difference. then,
well,
right?
Well, not really. And we are having, we're in, really in a water crisis.
Yes, we are.
When we deal with the quantity and the quality of water, there's a problem. And so over the years, we've known that the best water is water you treat right at your faucet, because the government, you know, allows up to 5-10% solid waste to come through the faucet. And another thing that we don't think about is how old are those pipes?
Mm-hmm.
How old? Some pipes are 100 years old. And who knows what's been running through those pipes before the water gets to us through our faucet. And so Kangen water, which is a, Kangen is a Japanese word that means return to the original. And our water has just been beat up. It's been beat up. And by using the Kangen water generator at our faucets, we're able to get alkaline, ionized, antioxidant, electron-rich, restructured, microclustered, active hydrogen saturated, oxidation reduced, powerful living water.
Mm.
And I have personally, of course, experienced the water, and this water should be part of anyone's prevention, disease prevention regimen, because the body is designed to heal itself. If we would just acknowledge that.
Yes.
We have everything. We're sent here with everything we need to stay healthy. What's the problem? We are full of toxins.
Mm-hmm.
We are full of acids. We eat too much cooked food. We don't drink enough good water. We don't exercise. And I can't say that this water cures anything. It doesn't. But what it does is assist the body to return to the state where it can heal itself. I am so hurt when you talk about the number of dialysis patients.
Oh, it's
painful. And kidneys, oh, can you drink some water, please? Just drink some water. And often when we think we're hungry, we're really thirsty.
Well, we're not getting enough nutrients and nourishment in our body.
No, we're not, because it's not in the soil. And then by the time food gets to our community, it is really dead. It's really dead. And so to have fresh fruits and vegetables and the Kangen water, I tell you, that community will be jumping up and down and dancing, and folks will wonder what is going on over here.
You know what's so interesting the Japanese, it's a part of their structure, their infrastructure. Am I correct?
Yeah, this water is so powerful that the Japanese Department of Health allows physicians to prescribe the water, and this machine is considered a medical device. Now, what's even more interesting is that the Canadian government has done the same thing. So if your doctor says you need this, then your insurance will pay for it.
Wow.
Now, that is extraordinary, and that's an acknowledgement of the power of prevention, because it really costs less to prevent disease than to try to do something with it once a person becomes ill. And I hope that under this administration that word goes out, because prevention is the key, and the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies are just going to have to find another way to make money.
Well, I was told, based on what I've been reading, the initiatives for our community has to come within. Our transformation has to come from within.
Exactly.
It is something that I understand that you have to transform your mind, and then the behavior will start promoting healthy living. You know, so our most interesting thing is people look at this show and say, well, you know, it's about construction. This is about a coalition of women who are in the construction industry that has a higher level of duties because we are here. Because
Master builders.
I don't know if anybody will be offended, but one of the things that really struck me about the last week's broadcast, there was such a spiritual aspect to that,
mm-hmm.
such a reverence for each other, such an acknowledgement of, you know, who we are as women and our commitment to our community. It was just wonderful, and that's what our country needs. We need to look at things a little bit differently and understand that we all want the same thing.
And the thing that I wanted to chime in, I like that word, Michelle. Michelle, we have another Michelle on the line from Minnesota. Michelle is our new director of new membership and all the above stuff. So, Michelle, you go ahead and chime in now.
Well, I was just really enjoying what Michelle, and I'm so sorry, I forgot the name of the lady that was speaking about the Kangen water.
I'm Henrietta.
Henrietta, I'm sorry.
That's
yeah,
okay.
You know, I'm glad you brought that back up because, you know, that is so true. It really comes back to the importance of taking care of ourselves. And, you know, once you get that bad off where you have to have dialysis so many times in a week, you know, it's practically too late. And I think what's really sad is a lot of people, they've heard professionals, loved ones say you need to drink more water, eat more fruits and vegetables, do this and do that. And I don't know, there's just, in our country alone, as simple as that may be, for some reason it doesn't register with a lot of people practically. And I don't understand why that is. And sometimes I have to catch myself too because it's so easy to go back to bad habits, you know, and stuff. But I think what it'll take is for people to really put it into practice. If they stop doing certain things and apply something new and give it 21 or maybe 30 days,
right.
I think it'll become normal or regular to them. I know when I was growing up, I did not drink water. My parents didn't really encourage us to drink water because they didn't drink it. In fact, it wasn't until I went to college when I really started drinking water on a regular basis. And I noticed how different I felt because I used to have bad cramps and really suffered a lot. And I noticed with certain dietary changes that I've made over the years, I just felt better. I had more energy or I wasn't as crabby. You notice it, and you know, if people would just really take to heart the benefits to taking care, you know, doing these simple practical things, I think we can see a drastic change. But yeah, it's still mind-boggling to me.
Let me ask you a question. When the choice came, was the choice that were made by you, was it made because of sickness that occurred, or was it a conscious choice that you made without having to go through anything?
It was a couple things. I kept having to go to the doctor. I didn't understand why I was cramping so much or why I was always in pain. So that was one reason. Another reason, too, environmental change. You know, I was going to school with other students who had certain dietary practices or lifestyle practices, and I would notice people drinking water. And I remember sitting and conversing with several graduate students at the time on such as discussions on butter versus margarine and different brands of water they were drinking. And sometimes when you're in an environment where you see people doing certain things, especially to be more healthy. That kind of, for me, that helped, or it triggered something in me. I also was invited to a lot of dinners when I was, you know, I hated the dorm food, and so some of the families in the church at the time would invite me to their homes, and we always had water at our dinner. And, you know, when I was coming up, we didn't do that. We always had our Kool-Aid, you know, great red, you named it. But, yeah, I learned over time to adapt to eating differently just by being around different people. So I think if we adapt those attitudes and those practices, and we have friends or loved ones or other professionals come among us, that might trigger something in them. But yeah, it was primarily some symptoms I had back when I was in college, and again, just being around other people who practice taking care of themselves.
And you know what? And that's interesting that that you said that. I try to go into a lot of things because I'm reading from different materials. But when you have create access to resources that support the health and well-being of people, then that's when transformation changes and on a global level. This forum today is going to be kind of back and forth, but this vital living center. It's to provide education and social change to support this new global platform, because this is not something that is new under the sun. My mother always used to say, there's nothing new under the sun, baby. I used to think she was crazy, first of all. But then I got a little older, and I realized she wasn't crazy. She just had a lot of wisdom. And so, therefore, understanding that when you start to transform and transcend into different environments, then you have a different outlay of type of people. Now, I always had the interesting story about Michelle was that basically she started talking about social capital, human capital, and financial capital systems and networks. And, of course, if everybody goes and I'm going to plug our site again, ncwcc.org. If you look at that acknowledgement, that system, that communication, that level is the basis of what we need to have in our community. And as business owners and as folks who are trying to change the face of not just contracting, because this is bigger than as Michelle said, this is bigger than just construction, but this is a part of a project that not just project oriented, but this is a targeted about 40 acres. This is a 10-year project that's going to help change the lives of these young people who are going to be a part of this project. These projects that are going to be transcending for a period of 10 years, and I know that this is I think Michelle calls it an extreme takeover, right?
Yes.
This is not
like that.
So an extreme takeover, and therefore, with that being said, the people that you're working with is a part of not just the vital living center transformation, but you're dealing with all sorts of different leveraging to raise capital, to be involved with different levels of political. And political individuals, I know that it takes a privatization and public partnership to do a project on this level. But the other thing that I wanted everybody to know is that we're taking this as a model in building this all around the country, community by community, state by state. If we have to do it three states at a time, and I think this is something that is one of the pieces that I've been looking at. That people are getting, you know, millions of dollars for just trying to restabilize or,
neighborhoods. Yeah.
Neighborhoods. However, if there's no sustainability, and the other part to this project is that we're bringing in the retail level, so some of these individuals who are going to be affording these the homes and the units are going to be able to work and live in the community, walk from out their door to an area where, like Michelle said, that they'll be able to walk and go to work, get off the bus, go home, not have any problems. And that, and it's a shame that in less than 8 to 10 years, or 8 to 20 years, that the communities have completely changed. I have seen this community, and it had a lot of potential. I think the challenge has been that Michelle and them have been, because of the city of Atlanta shortfalls, they have a community center that they're trying to maintain to keep the doors open for the community itself. It's a beautiful park. The park is gorgeous. But yet anytime you go by there, there's nobody really in the park. So that's one thing that that we will be able to work with and within that structure, is understanding that these parks that are closing around the country are very viable, and very viable to the existence of a community. So with that being said, I was going to try to ask Michelle one more or two other little quick questions about this, the total vision in which you looked at this community and said, you know, how did this last little leverage come about when you decided that you guys needed to take over that particular area, that area? I think there was a young lady that was a body that was found dead there.
Well, first of all, the gangs took over this abandoned apartment complex and became urban campers.
Mm.
And there's a lot of gun activity, or was a lot of gun activity, and a lot of gang activity down in this particular area. Now, they were punk gangs. They weren't gangs, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But a young girl was shot and left in this building, one of the 11 buildings that are on this property. And the trash was piled up. People were dumping mattresses, sofas, all kind of heavy trash was being dumped on this property. The apartments were cleaned out, and everything was put in the common areas. And so finally the community got sick and tired of it. It was becoming a health hazard, and the city of Atlanta wasn't moving fast enough. So the community forced the city to take the owners to court once they identified them. Now, that was part of the problem, is that nobody knew who the owners were, because this was a massive case of mortgage fraud, where there were 100 apartment units that were going to be converted starting in 2002 into condominiums, and there were straw buyers, and there was a lot of money taken out of the property, but nothing was left at the property. So we had trouble identifying the owners, but finally we were able to identify that banks had foreclosed on most of this property, and we were finally able to uncover within a period of 2 months all of the banks that were involved, and we took them to court. And there were over 72 code violations that were going to run up some very significant fines for these banks, which kind of forced them into undoing the titles to the point where we could sell the whole plot together or donate the whole plot together. And what was so awesome about it is, in court, the banks were not talking to the community to find out what they wanted to do. They just said, oh, we'll donate to Habitat for Humanity. Well, the community, the last thing that they needed at that particular moment was another Habitat for Humanity component on that road, because there's so much low income there already. And this apartment complex used to be the premier apartment complex in the community. So we convinced the banks that we had a nonprofit organization that was 11 years old that could take on this project on behalf of the community. And after Habitat looked at the property, they said, we don't want it. And we said, okay, we'll take it. And the banks spent another 9 months with us and our attorneys going through and weeding out the nightmare of title issues that there were. And finally, in August of this year, they transferred the property with a complete title policy to us.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Mm-hmm.
The premises of what I want, you have one, two, three, four, you have five states on the line right now. Do you see how, if we begin to take back and fight for our community, but we have to know how to fight, And so one of the things that I Michelle has conceded to work with the coalition on, and Ms. Henrietta has extensive background, and I'm just going to put her on the spot for about 30 seconds here, and about 11 years in the legislative, and she is a practicing attorney in the state of Georgia. You think I plug you guys for just because I like listening and talking? No, I try to be able to mimic everything so I can tell you business so everybody can know who he calls. So, but she is
a practicing
attorney. We'll be back here in Atlanta, and also she is going to lead the show once a month for the Health and Wellness series. So she will be the host. So you guys won't have to always listen to me. Thank you, God, because I'm just an
Henrietta, I have lots of guests for you. When you see what we have in place on this health and wellness piece, we're dealing with people who are working with the athletes all over the nation.
Wonderful.
On health and wellness.
Oh, this is so exciting.
And one other piece. We're working with, we have a scientist on board who worked for the federal government and understands about plant engineering and what's been done to our plants even, and the changing of the DNA structure of the plants. He can go into all that detail with you all and share some of the things about why our food isn't as healthy as we may even think it is, even if it's organic, because they've even engineered the plants where they're not. The DNA structure of them is such that we're not getting the nutrients that we need to. I mean, this is serious stuff.
They call that Frankenfood.
Mm.
Yes. Mm. And we're eating it every day.
Right. That's right.
I'm sorry.
This is interesting. I wanted to kind of bring a little bit more leverage to this group here. You got Mrs. Freeman on the line, and I hope that I'm not bothering her too much. But I want to tell everybody that she is celebrating her 32nd birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
And Janora Bowens is celebrating her 28th birthday. So I don't know how that works, but I want to say happy birthday to both of you all.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I do too. And these women have supported the health and wellness tremendously on giving me directions on how this thing is supposed to come together. And now that it's built, I'm almost sure that I can almost walk away from it and concentrate on how we're going to pull the industries, the private public partnerships that we're putting together to bring together this mix of government, federal, state, local, and private support that is going to take in order to continue to bring momentum to this initiative, because there should be vital living centers all over the country. And so, again, I wanted to stress that we will most definitely have a piece that is going to be able to bring the system. This is a system that's installed inside the kitchen, right?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's so awesome.
So therefore, when you have, we could realize in this transformation, you got about 54 units that we're looking at, and it's a total of 11 acres. This project is going to grow. I'm just going to release one more thing for health purposes. There's a hyperbaric chamber that this woman has received.
Actually, a hyperbaric building. We're gonna raise up a hyperbaric building so that when you go in to work out, you're breathing all that great oxygen.
I mean, I'm at a loss for words.
I know Ms. Freeman works out heavily. She goes and works out at the health club a lot.
Yes, I do.
And, you breathe a lot of different air there. So I think that's a very good change. I want to take a minute and take a break for a second and just kind of sit back for a second, you guys. I want to welcome caller from 617-894. Welcome, caller.
Hi, good evening. I'm just calling in. I'm just a listener. I'm calling in from New Jersey.
Welcome.
And I'm just calling in, just listening to the talk show.
Very good. Thank you so much for calling in. Please sit tight for a moment. I'm going to throw a little bit of a nice song for you guys. Welcome back, everybody. I sometimes feel like I've become a DJ on the show. that is Diopoly, Closer to My Dreams. Wanted to change the segment of the show just a little bit to let you all know that the coalition is not, it's on the right path. I was sitting at a table that, again, Michelle was able to put us at the table with some other folks, and hopefully, but this is an article that came out of the USA Today. It's a rising housing rising star, Ed Norton. He's a 2-time Oscar nominee, and he is playing a role of enterprise community partner, and with affordable housing. And that it was a part of his grandparents, James and Patty Rouse's, dream to work with the community in having affordable housing. So his business is a for-profit, not-for-profit hybrid enterprise. Okay? When I told somebody this at the table, it is the best well-kept secret. This gentleman has an enterprise that is to save America's cities, and he's invested billions of dollars for low and middle income people.
Now, which issue was that?
USA Today January 5th, 2009.
Okay, because we all need to get that.
The thing I wanted to share with you guys, I read and I collect more information than the law allow. They told my mother when they find me, I'll be in a pile of paper dead, but that's okay. Knowledge is power, and what I want to do is share with everybody that the information about this show is always archived, and I also challenge people to please, you know, identify the communities that are on the phone now. We are here to serve our community, and if there's any kinds of situations that involve the things that we've been talking about today, and go back through the archives for the last 3-4 months now, that our show is a part of our coalition. This is a branding for us. This is not to bring anybody to fame or fortune or things of that nature. One of the topics that I wanted to also tell you guys is that because of the Center for Women Business Research and Babson College, we were able to identify why the women of color have barriers when it came to businesses, and that's any business. And one of them is not having a social network, having a platform so that a platform creates change. If you're falling and there's no place to land, you're going to hit the bottom. So this forum is for to bring in, a sisterhood for all women, not just women of color, because our partners are all nationalities. Michelle, what's your last name?
My last name is Uchiyama. It's Japanese.
Okay.
For a moment there, I'm like, which Michelle?
I knew she was talking about me.
But my point is, ladies, we have a model of that we want to carry a series of shows throughout our 27 level chapters that we have throughout America. But a lot of women are afraid to step up. I sent a notice to the women's work and stated to them that it is time to bury our shame, first of all, and move forward. Because basically what has occurred is if you can go to our site, that the United States Small Business Administration, when it came to contracts for women, it has been identified that $340 billion has been allocated since 2006. And of all women, regardless, every woman, they put us all together, we only got $5 billion of it. They stated in one report that we got $140 billion, but it all came down to we only got $5 billion. We're getting 1% of the gross amount of contracts, and contracts in the government is anything. Anything that is procured as a human being, from ketchup to mustard to anything, those are contracts, services, babysitting, child care, health benefits. Anything. So there was none of our products or services or contracting the construction that had been delivered faithfully to the government that they escalated the dollar amounts. And this is on our site, and we had Margaret Dardoff from the U.S. Women's Chamber of Commerce to endorse one of the programs that we're talking about is a TRIM campaign, which is trans something. I know it. I wrote it. Transparency, reform, innovation, and measuring. Because one thing that we understand is that if you cannot measure your success, then and you cannot be measured in any kind of way, then you don't count. And all of this comes from data. And the one thing that we are doing by utilizing this show is to have a static footprint that the existence of a group, not just a group of women, but women all over the country, consciousness arising. And we also want to share with everybody that as of January, we are now taking on enrollment of members throughout the country. So we've been getting a lot of emails, and I'll be filtering that back to everybody. But we do have to be very careful of the fact that we have a tremendous opportunity to work within our communities on the government level, on the state level, and on levels that, like this particular project, that we become the creator of the table. Instead of sitting at the table and being happy about it, we are creating the table as women. It's women of all nationalities are at this table coming together. So I want to kind of stress that that point more so than ever to say that we must stay focused. We must remember to keep our eye on the prize. And with that being said, I want to share with you all one other thing before I get the reveling on about the Youth Build. It's something that I would love for everybody to get the word out, because this is 16-year-olds to 24-year-olds. I know that everybody got somebody laying around their house that look like them that need a job. So I encourage people to start inquiring, and this is throughout any parts of the United States. So if you guys have nephews or cousins or any of those cockroaches that's walking around the house eating all your food up and it's time for them to get jobs, okay, let's point them toward the Youth Build program.
Right, right.
So because I know they just got off of, what is that, what break was they on? The Christmas break?
Yeah,
and I'm sure everybody's refrigerator is empty who've had any children in their house. So they eat like roaches, right? So the Youth Build is a program that is initially was started, and in the last several years, $600 million has been allocated and awarded for Youth Build grants and contracts. So keep in mind that people around the country are utilizing our youth and in these programs, but the next step for us is to create a sustainable level of not just skills but jobs, because that is why people have been using this program for years. But the last point of this conversation is that once they get trained, they need to go to the next level, and the next level is being able to go into employment. Well, most of the jobs are going to be related around union and apprenticeship jobs. So that's to let everybody know that we are signature to the Carpenters on the national level. So therefore, we're able to now leverage that relationship, that agreement, to be able to put our kids in apprenticeship programs throughout the country. So I also wanted to make that announcement to let you know what we've been doing and what we've been trying to accomplish to leverage the power of change, because, you know, we have the ability to make anything happen these days. So I just share that with you all, and I wanted to just get into one last thought process. If we allow these projects to come off the ground after Barack Obama becomes president, he's ready to dig, and we're not in place, we're going to miss the next 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
We have a small window. Now, the only thing we can do is jump up and down with the rest of the women. But if you all do not sign on and want to be a part of this and get the word out to everybody, because let me put it like this. Let it be some real gossip. Let Michelle Obama be dating somebody else and she get caught. Now, you know that's going to be on the text messages. You know how we got the word out about everything? This is the time now to alert everybody about the coalition and say, look, we need to get momentum behind this organization, because we're not for profit. We're not taking money from any funding sources, so that therefore no one can tell us what to do and what to say and who to represent. Okay, so therefore you don't have to be afraid to call in and say this is happening to me, and then what we're doing is executing a campaign fund for legal defense and policy reform fund that we're doing a dollar for change. And I ask everybody to put that word out to everybody. And all we're asking for is that folks mail in $1 each month, not $1 more. If you send in, a dollar bill and write the word change on it. And therefore, the fight is going to go to the legislative, but we're not going to allow them to bury our issues inside the political realm that they've been doing. Because what will happen again is that you're talking about $1 trillion and how much money will we get? And we're talking about there's all sorts of services that are out there that people do not understand that the federal government is it has to purchase. They purchase everything from toilet paper to pantyhose to everything. Anything that you see in Walmart, Walgreens, or in any grocery store, the United States government purchased that. So everybody is connected to this economic reform. And let me also state that when federal dollars trickle into the states, that means that you have a right to be a part of every dollar, because if $1 is used, this is the law, you guys, it's Title VI. Am I right, Sister Henrietta?
Right. Mm-hmm.
If $1 hits a fund of some sort that's supposed to manifest into anything, they have to have us on involved. I don't care what it is. Don't let anybody tell you guys anything different. See, knowledge is power. I've like told people I'm the right one for the job. I'm going to tell everybody's business, because if you're not doing right, I'm not standing behind you. I'll kick you down the steps. I'm just playing, Ma. But anyway, but we have to stand for something, you know. And ladies, I share that with you. I'm very candid to a lot of people, and I'm sorry, but it's time out to stop whispering, and we need to speak louder. We need to come forth, because we are the creator of life. Women create life. And until we step up and take this power back, there was something that sister named Susan Usman said, the power to control your destiny. She had 8 points that she said that takes us into things. And she said harmony and balance, courage, generosity, happiness, cleanliness, internal beauty and confidence, and wisdom to make decisions. Those are the 8 qualities to a healthy, wealthy woman. So I share that with you because, you know, this sister is bringing back the understanding that we have the power to control our destiny. And ladies, we're not for sale. That is one of the things that she also mentioned. You know, you don't have to barter your services. You know, the one thing you hear people always say at these get-togethers, well, we need to volunteer. If we were on a line and it was all men, you won't hear anybody talking about men don't volunteer. You know, they don't volunteer. We volunteer because I'm not saying don't volunteer, but I'm saying that our services are not for free. You have value. And so this was a very important show for me because this kicks off 2009 and provides a platform for change. And so I just wanted to kind of bring that to light. And Michelle, I want to thank you again for bringing the coalition into a different understanding about how not just the money for the stimulation levels are, but the CDFI funds that are being investing in America and the communities. I didn't know anything about that.
Oh, wow.
Didn't know anything about that.
Well, good.
You know, and so that is just a piece of understanding that that we have to identify areas where we can access different levels of leveraging ourselves, because the banks are not lending money right now, not the way they
That's
used
right.
to. So
That's
we,
right.
so what we're going to be doing is constantly posting and upgrading the site with some of the things that we're trying to do. Some of the things, you know, we don't want to inundate the website any more than what I already have it as. I know it's a lot of information, but I always tell people, read the site, and if there's nothing on there that really interests you, then you're dead. You have no pulse, because there's something involved with the coalition that everybody can be excited about doing, being involved in. Wanted to also add that on the next show, we're going to be interviewing some of these new political figures who have been elected, some of you all voted for. So we also want you all to send us emails. I don't care what state you live in. Please, if there's something that you want to know from your elected officials, we will call them and summons them to the show. And we'll, if you don't want your name to be stated, we won't. But we'll say that one of our listeners wanted to hear from you. So if you all have a person that you feel that needs to be brought to the rug, please bring that point, and we will invite them to the show. And if they decline, then we'll let you all know, and then we'll send them a letter.
Somebody, I'd like to know what is the Department of Homeland Security doing, you know, particularly, you know, they're supposed to be directing the rehabilitation of New Orleans, I believe, and what's going on? And see, that department has a lot of money. They all have a lot of money. But
Michelle, I think you mentioned something about that with the food distribution.
There are a lot of jobs available, good-paying jobs in the area of Homeland Security for shipping food. They have to secure the food to make sure that it's not carrying disease or bugs or anything else. So you have a lot of agricultural jobs built within the Homeland Security Division. One of the things you all might consider is Saxby Chambliss, who is a senator for Georgia, is probably one of the most active people within the Homeland Security area, and he would be a source of knowledge. Now, he has some pretty savvy women working for him that could probably fill us in on a lot of those details.
Well, that's
so
great.
I might consider talking to them. And Teresa, who's one of his longtime aides, who works in the Galleria office here in Atlanta, might be a good person to tap into that for us and tell us who in Washington would be a good resource to talk about that.
Okay.
If we don't have somebody else.
Will you be going back into the legislative level, Miss Henrietta?
Well, you know,
get back here?
I would like to be a lobbyist. I'm not going to be an elected official anymore. But I know, you know, as I mentioned before, I know a lot of the people down there, and there's a just like with the law, there's a certain language,
mm-hmm.
and there's a certain way to deal, you know, to do things. So it's very, very important to have someone with that type of experience represent, you know, represent an organization or represent a group of people. And particularly now that there's just like cataclysmic changes going on at every level of government. And I think the point of to monitor those federal funds when they come down, because these good old boys are real crafty, and by the time you look up, you're just like, what can you do with $700 billion?
Where did IAG go? To the Bahamas?
AIG.
Well, AIG.
What can you do? So you can imagine if $700 billion with a B disappears, what's a few million dollars? You know? So it's about not only watching it, but training young people how to do that.
Absolutely. And there's a lady, Henrietta, that I would like to introduce you to when you get back to Atlanta as part of the coalition. And I'll introduce the coalition as a whole to her. Her name is Ann Batt, and her vision and mission is Operation Restoration.
Mm.
It's an operation to hold the government accountable for that $750 billion that they are putting back into the marketplace in the wrong places.
Right.
And she needs some help.
Okay.
She has a phenomenal plan, a 5-point plan for the foreclosure situation. It's just incredible. And I think it's time now to get a group of women behind her who can help facilitate getting that accountability in Washington.
Right, right. Because it's it's embarrassing to tell you the truth.
Oh, it is.
You know, here we are, people being put out on the street, and at this very moment, the fat cats are whooping it up on Bimini. Something's wrong with this picture.
Yep.
And we've got to make a difference. And construction. Let me just mention one thing. I was in the grocery store, and I picked up a newspaper, Our Time Press. And on page 7, it says, Builders, Building, Builders. And it talks about how, you know, builders, you know, how important builders are. And it talks about Harlem developers. It talks about, you know, some other things, and that construction and the whole green effort. Those two elements are the foundation of President Obama's program for revitalization across the country. And so we as, you know, women of color, we as women in construction, we are the cutting edge. We're not on the cutting edge. We are the cutting edge. And we also need to understand that we have such an ally with Michelle Obama, because she really handles a lot of things. And so we're at the right place at the right time. Let's make it happen.
We can't. Time is, a lot of people believe that when the January 20th comes, that's when the time will change. But time of change started November 4th.
That's right.
2008. And rest assured that everybody else, that, like you said, those fat cats, they are wrestling and maneuvering ways to get all that money and give us those scraps. And that's why I always share with folks that the building of the coalition has to be a national level.
Mm-hmm.
It the fundamentals has been based out of the peer development. Michelle is giving me some insight on some levels of building models, but we cannot, say enough that the just imagine what Michelle is trying to do here in Atlanta. You know, can you imagine other Michelles in other states?
Right.
What they're going through, and Michelle's been in the business of doing this type of business. God, for quite a while, she's helped a numerous amount of nonprofits build their structure, their infrastructure. The way she explained to me was that that she started dealing with the grassroots level. So when her time came up to be able to do this, she had the support of everybody, the entire community.
Right.
Am I right?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct, because you got to do it from a grassroots perspective. If you don't have the buy-in of people, you can't move things. It's the will of the people that moves things. And that's what we've lost for a long time, is that we haven't recognized that the will of the people can get things done. And I think that's what opened up this community, when they saw that their will could be done to get that property turned around and donated. Okay, back to the community. It was like we started having 50 people show up at our community development meetings again because they saw that they made a difference.
Right, right. Now, do you know Lee O'Neill?
I don't.
Okay, she's on off of MLK, and her community has all types of toxic waste in it. All types, and there's a landfill that was buried in the back of her house. But there are a lot of neighborhoods and a lot of communities that have all sorts of horror stories. But
there's a lot of money from EPA right now that's coming down to address those issues. It's just people being aware that it's there and putting a comprehensive plan together to address it.
Okay, I'm going to see her. She's here in New York, and she mentioned that EPA had been out there. So,
yeah.
But the issue of putting together a comprehensive plan, I mean, that is more than a notion.
Well, and we have a lady by the name of Flora Tommy who works with Charitable Connections.
Okay.
Who is actually a specialist in that environmental health arena.
Awesome.
And has lots of relationships with Fulton County and with the state. She actually, they made a Flora Tommy Day a few weeks ago in Fulton County because of all of her environmental work.
Great. So I'll
so
just have
you need
to contact
her.
You. Flora,
okay,
her
great.
Name is Flora?
Flora Tommy.
Okay. All righty, I'll do that. Thank you.
The other part that, what's happening in Minnesota is, I think Minnesota is one of those untouched areas when it comes down to the areas, right? You guys have good stabilized areas in Minnesota, right? Have you guys been impacted by some of this foreclosure?
Yes, we have.
Oh, okay. But you guys are on that. You guys are on the cream of the crop, cream of the crop list. I was told that you guys have a lot of jobs. You have some of the major Fortune 500 companies that are right there in Minnesota.
Colleen, let me explain to you. Everyone's been affected by the economic and the word recession that we're in, or some people call it depression. People are losing their houses, jobs. Big Fortune 500 Fortune job companies are closing their doors, laying people off. When they lay people off, they lay 2,000 people, 3,000 people off.
Mm.
It's not 100 people. And just imagine these 2,000, 3,000 people who have homes, and they will lose their homes. And imagine that Minnesota is part of that scam that you remortgage your
yeah.
house?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Reverse
and,
mortgage?
A lot of people are losing their houses, foreclosing, losing their house because they can't pay the high interest rate.
Right, the variable rate interest.
Yeah.
Oh, well, guess I read wrong. But and then I think the same thing is happening in Indiana, Ms. Freeman.
Yes. We have so many houses that you can pick from. People are losing their jobs. Some of the major companies are closing and pulling up and leaving the area. So there's nothing we can do but try to stay focused and stay afloat.
Okay. And what's the climate there in New York?
It's not good. It's not good. I mean, I got off the subway yesterday, and there was a woman sitting there with all kind of bags and shopping cart. And clearly, she was homeless, so she was bedding down in the subway. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And now the problem, these are such beautiful homes here in Brooklyn and in Harlem, and there is a lot of money coming into the country from China and Europe. So if anybody's looking for money, just give me a buzz.
Okay.
I guess we need to talk after the show, huh?
Well, ladies, also remember that we also have a chat room that you all can log on.
Okay.
And I heard people's breath start to take. Okay, right.
But and you know, particularly for large projects, I mean, hotels are being bought up for little or nothing. But then there's always somebody who's making money. So I'm going to meet with my contact tomorrow.
I'm not.
And just, you know, just see what he has to say. But it's not good. It's not good. It's rapid gentrification. We have some people who walk the neighborhoods with suitcases full of money and knock on doors. You know, don't you want to sell your house? open up the bag, you know, open up the suitcase, you know, you can have this money.
They lowballing your home.
Yeah, and there are a number of lawsuits where older people have been taken advantage of. You know,
they knock up that red and white house in Indiana. They're gonna have a problem. Trust me. Believe
the house
that.
Is brown and beige.
Well,
I've been home
know.
For a while. I'm sorry. My bad.
I know that they know the neighborhoods to stay out of, but it's like the Wild West. It's like the Wild West.
Well, send them down to Atlanta. We have a few less than savory large hotels on Fulton Industrial Boulevard.
Oh, yeah.
I do know. I don't know if that would be appealing for them. I'm not sure. But I will certainly, you know, keep all of that in mind. But
well, the governor's talking to China down here for that corridor, and the ING has been preparing warehouses for manufacturing and distribution for about 2 years now for the Chinese to come in and build their plants here.
What?
Yes.
But who's going to work in the plants?
The people in these neighborhoods.
Oh.
What's happened? Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
We've exported a lot. We've exported a lot of our solar technology and our advanced energy technologies to China.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They are now going to come back here and manufacture those technologies.
And sell
but
it
I thought,
us.
Yep.
But I thought Barack said we want to keep this in the United States, the high-paying jobs, so the energy and green in the United States.
Right, but the Chinese are the ones that are going to have to fund it because we don't have any cash right now.
Oh, my. But they're not going to pay sustainable wages.
That is a problem.
Yes, that's definitely a problem.
That is a huge problem. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it's not a good thing.
No, it's not.
The bad news is that the governors, because of their greed for economic development right now, have been having these conversations and haven't really been thinking. You know, I had an opportunity to move to Maryville, Tennessee for a while. And what I liked about Maryville, Tennessee is the city fathers decided that they did not want to attract any employment other that paid any less than $22 an hour.
Oh, okay.
And so they went after corporations who had wanted to build facilities or run operations that were paying $22 an hour or more, because they wanted to preserve the housing market that they had there and the value of the homes that people could afford to live in those homes. And when I saw that, I said, this is the brightest thing since sliced bread.
Right. Yes, those are the middle-class people.
That's right.
Those
Imagine
are the middle-class
that.
People.
Somebody thinking in the right manner.
Well, ladies, I hate to cut this short, but Karima is about to sign off here. I want everybody to know that we thank you all for attending the very first show for 2009. Many more to come. We're going to be having various hosts, so don't always remember that Karima will be on phone all the time. Thank you. And I wanted everybody to get a chance to, Henrietta, please tell everybody about your website. Your website address?
Right. The website for the water is www.thewatertruth.com/Henrietta.
Okay. And
thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Michelle?
Thank you all.
Did you have a website?
www.charitableconnections.org.
Okay. And,
and you
Maggie
can
Frieden?
Check out the Vital Living Center on there.
Okay,
okay,
Maggie,
great.
Frieden?
Yes, so www.youpreventbiz.com.
And Ms. Bowman?
www.cei.com. Sorry.
CECI.com. Well, ladies, yeah. I want to thank you all, and thank you for, you know, being a part of some of this fiasco that I have going on inside the lives of the coalition. But I thought it was very interesting that the health and wellness and the legislation met the health and wellness in the punch there. So, ladies, thank you, and you all have a very good afternoon.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Please, if it's a dream, don't pinch me, baby, could you let me sleep?